I'm not going to say too much tonight. I've said enough last week. I just want to share with you my favorite passage for this week of Suzuki Roshi and say a word about the eclipse because Laura and Martha both asked me to say something about the eclipse. So just a little bit about that, and then my passage. And then after that, Jeff or Maya will put us into groups of three, and we'll all share our favorite passages from Zen Mind, Beginner's Mind in groups. And we should have plenty of time after that to continue that sharing in the whole group and or any other questions or comments that you might have about Suzuki Roshi's teaching or anything else that comes up. So that's the plan for tonight, a little unusual. First about the eclipse, and maybe some others of you were watching the eclipse too. I know Kathy was, and she might have something to say later on. So as you know, session finished Sunday morning. And we had Shosan ceremony and then breakfast, and then there was cleanup. And Kathy and I left right after breakfast and went directly to the airport where we went to Dallas, because Dallas is in what they call the path of totality, as we're about 31 a million Americans living in cities that happen to be in the direct path of the total eclipse. Dallas, Indianapolis, Buffalo, New York, and a lot of other places with a lot of people in them. So we got to Dallas, and our friend Emily had organized all this, and we had a place to stay. And the next morning, we got up and walked to a park about 10 minutes away called Turtle Creek Park, if you know Dallas. It's a really nice, small, very small, but really nice park. And it was full of people, not too crowded, but covered with people. There were some food trucks and a couple of portable bathrooms. And we arrived there in time for the beginning of the eclipse. And so if you don't have these special glasses, the eclipse, you can't really tell. You can see that something is odd about the sun, but you can't tell what. It's somewhat distorted, and the light, the ambient light, is a little strange, but it's possibly you might not notice much. But if you have these dark glasses, these are glasses that I don't know what they're made out of, but if you put them on, you can't see anything at all. They're just completely black. But if you look up at the sun, you can look at the sun. And you could see right away that there was like somebody took a bite out of the sun. On the lower right-hand side, there was a bite taken out of the sun that was the moon beginning to eclipse the sun. And that bite got bigger and bigger and bigger. I forget how long it was, maybe an hour or more. And little by little, if you look through the glasses, you saw the sun becoming reduced until eventually it became almost like a pencil line around one half of the sun on the upper left. And so with the to the naked eye, again, you'd see that the sun was weird and the light was weird and growing a little dim, but it really wasn't all that spectacular in a way. But with the glasses on, you know, to see this very thin curve was rather something. But the part that surprised me is that when it was total, when the eclipse was total, there was a categorical difference. It wasn't just gradual, it was distinct. All of a sudden, so I was looking through the dark glasses and I was looking at this, you know, little round half disk of light, and it just went dark. I couldn't see anything at all out of the glasses. And I took the glasses off and I could look up directly at the sun, and I could see that the sun appeared to be a black sun in the sky, surrounded by a little aureole of light. Of course, it was the moon that I was looking at, which was black. And then it got dark, almost completely dark. I mean, not pitch dark, you could see your hand in front of you and stuff, but dark as if it were night immediately. And so this was surprising to me because gradual seems gradual. This was not gradual. This was sudden enlightenment or endarkenment, kaboom, all of a sudden, you know. So that was surprising how sudden it was and how dramatic it was. And so that's the totality. That's why you want to be in the totality, because partially seeing it is not as dramatic. And then you looked up at the sky for 4 minutes, and it was like that for four minutes. It was dark. Everybody in the park, you know, applauded and hooted and hollered, and it was pretty exciting. And for 4 minutes, you could look at this with the naked eye and see this black ball hanging in the sky with a little circle of light around it. And then after 4 minutes, again, it was light again, when a very small sliver of the sun. I mean, it tells you how powerful the sun is when maybe 1% of the sun being visible to the earth creates all the daylight you need. Just 1%. So the sun is much more serious a phenomenon than I kind of quite ever realized before. And so then we sat there while the sun got larger and larger, and again the bite taken out of it got smaller and smaller, and then it was over. So it was very impressive. And that night we stayed in Dallas and flew home the next day, yesterday, and arrived home last night. So one thing that was funny in my mind is that 4 minutes was so weird and so unprecedented in my life that I can't tell whether it really happened. I don't know if you've ever had experiences like that that are so surprising or out of the ordinary that you, after it's over, you say, "Did that really happen?" I mean, I know it really happened, so it's not that I doubt it, but my subjective experience of it was that it almost didn't register as something that happened. It seemed outside of happening. So that's my story about the eclipse. And but it did make me a believer, you know. Now there's a word for this, umbrophile. So now Kathy and I are, she was already an umbrophile. That's why we went there, because if you would have asked me, I would have said, "It's ridiculous. We can't go there. We're too tired. We're too old. It's a shin just over. It's always tiring." But she really wanted to go, and so we went. So now I'm also an umbrophile, and I'm sure that we'll go to the ends of the earth in the future, when there's another eclipse, which there is next year and the year after that in other parts of the world, not here in the United States. So this is my passage from Suzuki Roshi, and this is one that I've always remembered. It appears in this edition on page 78. It's in the part that says "Study Yourself." It's the headline is "Study Yourself." And I'm not going to begin at the beginning. I'm beginning several pages into that section called "Study Yourself," and I'll read about a page. When I was at a Heiji monastery in Japan, everyone was just doing what they should do. That is all. It's the same as waking up in the morning. We have to get up. At a Heiji monastery where we had to sit, we sat. When we had to bow to Buddha, we bowed to Buddha. It's like that, by the way, in Sesshin too. You just do what you have to do. And when we were practicing, we did not feel anything special. We did not even feel that we were leading a monastic life. For us, the monastic life was the usual life, and the people who came from the city were unusual people. When we saw them, we felt, "Oh, some unusual people have come." We used to feel just the same way in the Tassajara guest season when I lived there many years ago. Unusual people are showing up. The guests would come. They're so unusual. And they also thought we were unusual, I guess. Then he goes on. But once I had left Ahaji and been away for some time, coming back was different. I heard the various sounds of practice, the bells, and the monastics reciting the sutra, and I had a deep feeling. There were tears flowing out of my eyes, nose, and mouth. It is the people who are outside of the monastery who feel its atmosphere. Those who are practicing actually do not feel anything. I think this is true for everything. When we hear the sound of the pine trees on a windy day, perhaps the wind is just blowing and the pine tree is just standing in the wind. That is all that they are doing. But the people who listen to the wind in the tree will write a poem or will feel something unusual. That is, I think, the way everything is. So to feel something about Buddhism is not the main point. Whether that feeling is good or bad is out of the question. We do not mind whatever it is. Buddhism is not good or bad. We are doing what we should do. That is Buddhism. Of course, some encouragement is necessary, but that encouragement is just encouragement. It is not the true purpose of practice. It's just medicine. When we become discouraged, we want some medicine. When we are in good spirits, we don't need any medicine. You should not mistake medicine for food. Sometimes medicine is necessary, but it should not become our food. So, of Rinzai's four ways of practice, and he's referring to something he spoke about earlier in the passage, there's several different Zen teachers who would say there's three ways to teach Zen, or four ways to teach Zen, and so on. And Rinzai's four ways is one of the most famous ones. And the four ways are, and this is Suzuki Roshi's talking about Rinzai's four ways. The four ways are, sometimes he talked about the disciple himself or herself. Sometimes he talked about the teaching itself. That's the second. Sometimes he gave an interpretation of the disciple or the teaching. That's the third. And finally, sometimes he did not give any instruction at all to his disciples. So that's the fourth one. So here he says, so of the four ways of practice, the perfect one is not to give a student any interpretation of themselves, nor to give them any encouragement. If we think of ourselves as our bodies, the teaching then may be our clothing. Sometimes we talk about our clothing, sometimes we talk about our body, but neither body nor clothing is actually us. We ourselves are the big activity. We are just expressing the smallest particle of the big activity, that is all. So it is all right to talk about ourselves, but actually there is no need to do so. Before we open our mouths, we are already expressing the big existence, including ourselves. So the purpose of talking about ourselves is to correct misunderstanding we have when we are attached to any particular temporal form or color of the big activity. It is not necessary to talk about what our body is and what our activity is, so that we may not make any mistake about them. So to talk about ourselves is actually to forget about ourselves. That's an interesting passage for me. I feel that way, you know, when we talk about ourselves and we can be so earnest about it as if this is really us, but it isn't. You know, it's just it's a custom, you know, among human beings to talk about themselves and to consider that they are themselves. This is a common custom that we all must abide by, otherwise people will think we're insane. And yet, we know better than that. We know that all of our problems are not as they appear to be, all the things we think about ourselves are incorrect. We all know that, but we continue anyway. I was thinking today about my old teacher, Bernie Glassman, and the teaching of his that impressed me the most is he would say, he would say, "Well, that's just my conditioning." And I thought, oh, that's amazing, that he would say that. We all have our conditioning, so that we come by it honestly, and we need to exercise it. But we know that also we're something beyond our conditioning, and that's the part that we cultivate in zazen, and that's why it's so important to continue to do zazen and do sesshin and all that, because little by little, we realize, oh my God, this cover story of being myself is running so thin, so thin. Anyway, I thought that maybe now, whoever we, either Maya or Jeff, could put us all into groups of three, and in those groups of three, everybody can find their passage, and you might have to abbreviate a little bit so there's enough time. But I think we have lots of time in these groups since I'm not saying talking for very long. There's lots of time tonight. So in the group, we're going to have a full half hour for these groups of three. So that means that everybody should have a chance. Time yourself and make sure that everybody does get a chance, but there should be a chance for all three people to share your passage and say something about why, that's important to you. If for some reason you don't have the book there or you don't have a passage selected, you can talk about something else, talk about whatever teachings of Suzuki Roshi you've heard this practice period that stick with you. One way or another, in a half an hour, we can all share. And then a half an hour from now, we'll come back together again. And then people can raise their hands and they can either share a passage, the one that they just shared, or maybe they have a second one they want to share, and or bring up comments, questions, things about the practice period. And we'll see what happens. I can respond if I have any response. So, and then also during that time, it would be appropriate if anybody else has impressions of the eclipse, because you saw the eclipse. You could bring that up too if you want. So, okay, is that, can we do that? Is that going to work out? Okay, so everybody's going to be in groups of three. I will disappear and I'll see you all in one half hour from now, which will be about 20 minutes after the hour. Okay, thank you for listening. See you soon.